Okay, welcome back everybody to the last Monday night learning of the season. And really a major yasher kof to everybody for coming out tonight. I have to say I was debating whether we should have shir tonight or not. I know everybody is extremely busy. And we have people here who themselves are making Pesach in just a couple of days. And it's a real testament to all of our understanding that part of preparation for Pesach is not only kashering the kitchen and getting together all of the everything we're going to need for the Seder and making it a special holiday, but also making sure that we understand what we're doing and we think about what we're doing, we reflect on what we're doing. And it's inspiring to me that that we have people within our community who, you know, want to come out to learn just a couple of days before Pesach. So I wanted to talk about the mitzvah that we're going to fulfill tomorrow night, as Hashem, the mitzvah of Bedikas Chametz, searching after our chametz. And I'd like to try to develop an approach very much rooted in like so many of so much of what I've shared this year, very much rooted in what I've heard from Rabbi Rabbi Rosenzweig, about what Bedikas Chametz teaches us about our perspective on chametz and on the holiday of Pesach in general. So the Mishnah at the very beginning of Maseches Pesachim, it starts off, the whole Masechta starts off in source number one, Or la'arba'as arbot kenes ha'chametz la'or ha'ner, on the eve of the 14th, on the night of the 14th of Nisan, so we search for chametz with a candlelight. It's interesting, just as an aside, that la'or ha'ner is almost like thrown in as part of the definition of the mitzvah, right? Like we're saying from the get-go, this is what we're going to do on the 14th. Not only are we going to search after the chametz, but we're going to do it with candlelight. So I want to try to think about that a little bit. Like, what is it about candlelight that is so significant to this mitzvah? But before we get there, let's get to really like the most basic, the most essential question, which is, why is it to begin with that we have to do Bedikas Chametz? Bedikas Chametz is midr abanan. It's something the rabbis told us to do. Did the Torah tell us to do it? Where does this come from? Why are we doing it? So Rashi in source number two tells us, Bodkin, Shelo yavor alav beval yiroeh ubeval yimatzeh. We know that the Torah prohibits us from owning chametz over Pesach. That's why so many of us just did Mechiras chametz just a couple minutes ago, right? Because we want to make sure that we don't own any of our chametz over Pesach, because doing so would unfortunately be a violation of a very serious prohibition in the Torah, bal yiroeh bal yimatzeh. So Rashi says, the Rabbanan came along and added on a concept called Bedikas Chametz, which means go around your house, search after the chametz. That way you'll make sure that you don't have any chametz in your possession. The assumption was that you're not going to do a mechira to take care of all of your chametz. You're actually going to get rid of it. How are you going to get rid of it? Well, you got to look for it first. After you look for it, you'll burn it, and then you get rid of it, and then you won't violate the isur of Bal Yiroeh and Bal Yimatzeh. Okay, so that's Rashi. So far, so good, except that Tosfos in source number three has a slam dunk question on Rashi. He takes Rashi to task, and he says as follows: Pirsha kuntres shlo lavor alav beval yiroeh ba'imotzeh. Rashi explains that the reason why we have to do bedika is in order to prevent ourselves from violating the isur of bal yiroeh and bal yimatzeh of owning chametz on Pesach. V'kasha l'ri. So the ri found this very difficult. Why? Kevan ditzarech bitul. We know that something that you have to do in advance of Pesach is nullify your chametz. That's called bitul chametz. What we say, kol chamira v'chamia, desli v'rshusi, any chametz that I have should be kehefker hefker u'cha'afr da'ara. It should be hefker, it should be ownerless, and it should also be like the dust of the earth. So we nullify mentally and verbally the chametz. And we have to do that. Kid'omer b'gemara, the Gemara Pesachim says, ha'bava mibiz, ha'bodik tzarech shi'yivatel. Even if you search after the chametz, you still have to do the bitul. And we're going to do the bitul right after the bedika tomorrow night, and then we're going to do it for a second time when we burn the chametz on Wednesday morning. Umid oraisa, biblically speaking, bebitul be'al masagi. All you have to do is do the bitul. That alone is sufficient. So it's almost like a puzzle here. There's a mystery here. On the one hand, the Torah tells us that all we have to do in order to save ourselves from violating the Isser, Bal Yiroeh and Bal Yimatzeh, is bitul. All we have to do is nullify the chametz. So then if Rashi thinks, so then why would Rashi say that you also have to do the bedika for the very same purpose? And you might have said, oh, well, not everybody's going to do the bitul. But you have to do the bitul. So of course everybody's going to do the bitul. So if everybody's doing the bitul, And the beetle covers you for Baal Yirah Ma'imatze. Why do you have to do something else to cover you for Baal Yirah Ma'imatze? You already covered. Basically, already covered. That's Tosos' question on Rashi. So Tosos takes a different approach from Rashi, and he says, "Venir liri, the afal gav de sagi bibito ba'alma." Even though it's true that when you nullify your chametz, that's sufficient to save yourself from violating Baal Yirah Ma'imatze. Hechmiru chachamim livdok chametz ulevaro. The chachamim came along and were very stringent and enforced. They instituted that we should search after the chametz and destroy it. Why? Shelo yavo la'achlo. That way you'll save yourself from a different prohibition. Not the prohibition of owning the chametz, but the even more severe prohibition on Pesach of eating chametz. Eating chametz is like the worst Easter you could do on Pesach. It's an Easter karis. So whenever we have an Easter karis, the most severe type of prohibition, very often we build a lot of fences around it. We know the Mishnah Avos says, Asusi aglator, right? So whenever you have something that's literally poisonous, it's spiritual poison, you want to make sure that you're not even going to come close to that. You're going to stay yards and yards away from there. So the Chachamim came along and said, we're not going to let you risk that you're going to see that really nice cake that you have, and then you might take a bite on Pesach. No. We're going to make sure that you do a bedikah, and that way you get rid of it in advance of Pesach. You don't test yourself. Okay? So that's Tosos. Shelo yavo la'ach. Fine. So up until now, according to Tosos, the whole purpose of the bedikah, of searching after the chametz, we might characterize it as having a pragmatic nature. It's practical in its character, right? What's the point of the bedikah? To find the chametz and get rid of it, because otherwise you might eat it. It's a very practical process. But the truth is that if we go through a number of areas of the halachos of bedikas chametz, what seems to emerge is that the bedikah, this mitzvah to search after the chametz, is much more than just like a practical type of process. That's certainly the case. That's part of the process, to get rid of the chametz to save yourself from eating it. But what we're going to come across is a number of anomalies, or just maybe hints or puzzle pieces, that seem to imply, they suggest to us that there's more going on here, that there's something larger going on here. There's more to the picture than just getting rid of the chametz to stop yourself from eating it. So I want to I want to explore four different areas of the halachos of bedikas chametz. The halachos of bedikas chametz are, you know, very lengthy. We're not going to be able to do all of it in just 30 minutes. But I chose four that we can try to explore a little bit. And we'll see in each one of the four, there's going to be a little puzzle piece. And we'll bring it all together at the end to try to explain how bedikas chametz may be even more than just preventing ourselves from eating the chametz. So let's begin in the second section with the timing of the mitzvah of bedikas chametz. Says the Shulchan Aruch in source number 6, "Betchilas leil yodalid benisan bodkim es hachametz lo'or haner b'chorin uvistakin b'chol hamekomo shaderech lahachmi sham chametz." On the beginning of the night of the 14th, we search for chametz with candlelight in all of the cracks and crevices, in all of the places in which we are accustomed to bringing chametz. So the Shulchan Aruch, and this is based on the Gemara Psachim, Daf Dalid, says that we try to, based on the Mishnah, or La Arba Asar, at the very beginning of the night of the 14th, that's when we're going to search after the chametz. So it's not sufficient that you do it on the night, meaning if you do it throughout the night, you fulfill the mitzvah. But what really is the way to do the mitzvah? At the beginning of the night. Why specifically at the beginning of the night? So says the Mishnah Berurah, source number 7, Betchilas Leil Yodalid, Peirush Tekef Achar Yetzias HaKochavim. Mishnah Berurah says we're going to do it right away after nightfall. Right, if you come tomorrow night to Shul, Adav Mincha Maariv, and then you go home, and right away after Tzitz HaKochavim, right after nightfall, you're going to start the Bedikah. According to the Gra, you started even a little bit before the Tzitz HaKochavim. But most poskim, like the Mishnah Berurah, say you started right after nightfall. Why? There's still some light outside. Not sure exactly how that works with nightfall, but around that time, roi lahaskil livdog. So you start to check why kadesh lo yisrashel o shelo yishkach, so that you don't mess up, so that by accident you don't forget that you had to do the bedikah. If you know you have to do it right away, you're going to get your job done right away. You're going to check off the box. Okay, so the Mishnah Berurah is taking a more, again, pragmatic approach to this. We want to make sure that you get it done, so you get it done right away. Take a look, though, at source number 5. There's a fascinating comment of the Talmud Yerushalmi. Quotes Rabbi Mana. This is on the third line of the Yerushalmi, towards the end of the line. It's in the bold. Rabbi Mana offers a different opinion as to why you have to check on the night of the 14th. Ushmartem es hayom hazeh ledoro seichem chukas olam. You should guard this day for generations. This is an eternal decree. Asei shiyehu hayom b'halayla mishumarim. You should see to it that the night and the day of the 14th are guarded from chametz. How do you do that? How do you encapsulate the entirety of the day to make it into a day that is guarded? How do you apply to it the status of a day that's guarded? Well, you got to start at the beginning. Where else do we find that we try to do something right at the beginning of the night? Beginning of the night? Yeah, what were you going to say?
I was going to say Ketzira for the Shmur Masa we learned.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I'm thinking outside of Pesach for now. It's a little bit connected to Pesach, actually. Maybe a hint. What else do we do at the beginning of the night? Okay, that's true, right? Okay, Shabbos, Kiddush, that's good. Kiddush also for the Rambam tries to encapsulate the entire day. What about Sfiras HaOmer? Right? Sfiras HaOmer, according to some, you try to do right at the beginning of the night because you're trying to make the entire day a counted day. So very similar concept here where we check for the chametz at the beginning because we're trying to make the whole day guarded. What is that idea? That's something clearly much more than just a pragmatic, you know, point that you got to do it because you might forget otherwise. So what are we trying to say? We're trying to make the entire day guarded. What are you achieving by doing that? That's a puzzle piece. Okay, so let's keep going for a second. Now take a look at this. Source number 8. Shulchan Aruch says, "Hamechabid chedro b'yod gimel b'nisan." If you clean your house on the 13th, which we should do, the Rambam actually says, the Rambam says explicitly that one is supposed to clean his house in advance of doing the bedika. So hamechabid chedro b'yod gimel b'nisan umechavim livdo kachometz. So this is tomorrow, right? It's Tuesday afternoon. I'm in my dining room. I decide I want to sweep up my dining room from all the leftover chametz from Shabbos. And I have in mind that I want to do bedika now. I don't want to wait until the 14th. I want to be even extra zariz. I want to be even extra alacritous. I want to do it now. Mechavin livdo kachometz ulevaro. V'nizhar shalo lahach nisham ol chametz. Not only do I say that I want to check it now, but I'm also taking upon myself not to bring chametz anymore into this room. Afal pichin tsarich livdok b'leil yodal. Nonetheless, you have to again go ahead and check the same room on the night of the 14th with a bracha. Why? I just checked it 2 hours ago, and I said I'm not bringing any more chametz in. I'll even put up a video camera. I'll check it to see if I brought any chametz. But I still have to do it. Why? Says the Mishnah Brura, Sif Mem Hei, source number 9. Af hapichin tzarech livdok. She'akibud inu bedika gemura. Shema neshtayer chametz be'izaguma. Just sweeping it is not enough. Va'afilu in bodak le'or haner b'chorinu v'stakim. Even if on Tuesday afternoon I light a candle and I do the ceremony of bedikas chametz and I go into all of the cracks in the dining room and I'm checking whether there's chametz, Gam kein tzarech lachzor v'livdok b'layla kechol Yisrael shlo b'chalik b'bedika l'bedika. I still have to do it again on the night of the 14th. Why? So that we don't distinguish between bedikos. What the Mishnah Berurah here is trying to say is that the night of the 14th is allotted for the entire Jewish nation to conduct this ceremony. Bedikas chametz. What is it? How is it a ceremony? Isn't it just about finding chametz? If you found the chametz earlier, what's ceremonial about it? Okay, so the timing really, the fact that you have to do it at the beginning of the, and let's add one more thing. I didn't put this on the sheet, but there's a comment that the Mishnah Berurah makes in his longer parish called the Bir Halach. Whenever we have a mitzvah, Chazal always tell us not to eat too much within the half hour before that mitzvah. They tell us don't throw a whole huge feast half an hour before the mitzvah, because you might get caught up in the feast and you'll forget to do the mitzvah. Fine. However, if you want to just sit down for a snack, you want to have, you know, some fruit, so that would be totally fine. That's what Chazal says. Bir Halacha says when it comes to the mitzvah of bedikas chametz, you shouldn't even do anything to delay once the time of the mitzvah comes. You can't even have any, you really shouldn't be eating anything until you do the mitzvah. Meaning this mitzvah is a rule breaker. It's not the same, let's say, as menorah or as other mitzvos where we're not supposed to eat in advance. Here the rules are even stricter. They're more stringent. Why is that the case? Why do we care so much about doing the bedikah right away at the beginning? Even if you did it before, you have to do it again. Even if you did it before with a candlelight, you have to do it again. And you can't even eat anything once the time for the mitzvah arrives. Why? Okay. Second section of halacha that I wanted to explore a little bit was the candle. We pointed out at the beginning, just the note that Or La'arbas are both going to sachamitz L'Or HaNer, that the candlelight seems almost like it's definitional to the mitzvah. I'll actually point out something I didn't put on the sheet as well, which is that the Ran, Rabbeinu Nisim, he infers from the Gemara that bedikas chametz must have a biblical expression. You know what? Actually, before I get to the candlelight, let me explain what I'm saying here with the Ran. Remember Tosfos, we're going to do a little backtrack. Okay? Remember Tosfos asked on Rashi. Rashi said, why do I have to do bedikas chametz? Because I want to save myself from owning the chametz. Tosfos said, what do you mean? You're going to do the beetle anyway, so why do you need to do the bedikah? So the Ran comes and defends and justifies Rashi's position. Should have said this earlier. I apologize. The Ran says that what Rashi's trying to say is that there are really two avenues that the Torah provides for you to manage your chametz affairs prior to Pesach. One of them is called beetle. And if you do beetle ba'al masagi, all you have to do is the beetle. That's enough. But for those of us who don't want to do the beetle, we're iconoclastic, we want to take a different approach. So the Torah has another avenue. It's called bedika ubiur. Searching after the chametz and burning it. You could do either one. Either one suffices min ha-Torah. Midrabanan, you have to do both. Min HaTorah, you could do either one. And that's all that Rashi meant. So what Rashi was saying was that if you're not going to do the bedika, if you're not going to do the beetle, you do the bedika and the biur. If you're not going to do the bedika and the biur, you do the beetle. One or the other. Fine. So according to this comment of the Ran, what emerges is that bedika actually has a de'oraisa expression in the case where I choose not to do the beetle. If I don't do the nullification, I'm going to do the search and destroy avenue. And in that case, it's De'oraisa. The Ran brought a proof that it's De'oraisa in his commentary. You know where his proof comes from? From the fact that the Gemara has psukim to derive that we use candlelight for bedikah. Candlelight is the Ran's source that bedikah has a De'oraisa expression. So again, this just kind of like emphasizes, it underscores our question. What is it about the candlelight that's so definitional to the process of bedikas chametz? And then we learn halacha lemaisa in source number 10. The Gemara tells us that we can't use sunlight, we can't use moonlight, you can't use a torch. All of those are no good for bedikah. I heard some discussion during Seder whether you could use a flashlight. There's discussion in the postgame about using a flashlight. Maybe using a flashlight is better than using a candle because it's safer. And one of the reasons why we don't use a torch is because it's dangerous. So maybe a flashlight is better. We still try to keep the tradition of at least, you know, lighting one candle. For bedikas chametz, but there definitely is backing to use a flashlight. But at the end of the day, we're so narrow, we're so, you know, precise about the type of light that we use for bedikas chametz. Why? Why is it so important? The Mishnah Berurah, source number 11, says, why do you use the candlelight, or why do you not use a torch? She'in yachol lehachniso lechorinu listakim. You can't do such a rigorous, thorough check if you're going to use a torch, because you won't be able to get into the cracks. That's why you have to use a candle. Vigam shu misyari, shemen yisrof habayis. If you use the torch, who knows what's going to happen, chas v'shalom. So we want to make sure that you use something where you'll be able to do a very rigorous check. Now, just halacha l'maisa, as an aside, source number 12, this doesn't mean that you have to turn the lights off in the house. Now, I know some people do this, but it's not necessary. The Piskei Tshuva says, "Umitam zeh yesh hanogim l'chabos esorach hashma b'shas bedikas chametz she'az or haner mavhik b'yoser," because then the candlelight will really be beneficial, right? But omnam ha'olam in medaktikin b'kach. You don't have to be so precise about this. Because the light that we get from electricity is not exactly the same as the light you get from the sun during the day, and it's perfectly fine to have light from your lamps and your bulbs during the B'dikas Chametz. But still, we would still light a candle. That's the minhag, to still light the candle in accordance with the beginnings of this mitzvah. Why? What is so crucial about the candlelight and all that it represents? Number three, third area of halacha that I want to explore is the bracha. And this is really puzzling, the bracha. Has anybody ever thought about this? You probably, I bet that many people say that, at one time in their life have said the wrong bracha on the mitzvah of B'dikas Chametz. Right? Because what's the bracha? Al bi'ur chametz. What does the word bi'ur mean? Usually it means burning, right? So why are we making the bracha on burning when we're searching? We're not going to do the burning until the next morning. I hope I get a good night's sleep. I mean, I'm not thinking about the burning yet. Why am I making the bracha on the burning? And what's so bad about the searching? Why can't I say al bedikas chametz? What's so bad about the bedika that I have to skip over it and go to the burning? It's like a mismatch over here. What's going on? So the Rush in source number 14, he says like this: Umin haroy sheyivarech kodem bedika al bedikas chametz. We should have said al bedikas chametz. Why did they say al biur chametz on the burning? Lefi shalachar habedika miyad hu mevatel. Right after he searches, he's going to nullify the chametz. V'hainu biur the chametz. That is considered a destruction of the chametz. It's not a physical destruction, but it is a destruction of the person's relationship with the chametz. Right? He's destroying the chametz mentally, saying that it's worthless. Okay. And then he's going to put aside the chametz that he's leaving over to have for breakfast. He's going to eat it until the fifth hour of the next day. And then he's going to actually burn the chametz. So it's a whole process. It's a journey called Bi'ur Chametz. It starts with the bedika, and then you have a beetle, and then you eat a little bit, and then you burn. V'al isek zeh nigrara habracha shel bedika. It's on this process that the bracha of the bedika goes. So we make the bracha at the beginning of the process, but really what we're referring to is the process of biur, of getting rid of the chametz. Meaning if you just searched for the chametz and you didn't get rid of it, well then you wouldn't be doing very much, right? The whole process of the searching is dependent on it eventually having the outcome of burning it. So therefore, since this is the beginning of the process, you're eventually going to burn it. That's why you make the bracha on the burning, but you do it at the beginning. That's what the Rosh says. Okay. It still begs the question a little bit. Like, why not just make it on the bedika? Why is it always having... You have the biur in mind at the time that you do the bedika. What's that about? And then the last area of halacha that I wanted to discuss was one of our favorites. 10 pieces of bread. Right? The kids' favorites, our favorites. I was just in Bingo yesterday in Muncie. I saw they were selling... It's the first time in my life I saw this. You've seen this before? Oh, come on. They sell a package of 10 pieces of bread for $1.19. No, but not with the feather. This is not like the feather and the spoon. That I've seen many times. This was a package with 10 little sections of plastic-wrapped pieces of bread, each one smaller than a kezias, to buy for $1.19. My family was arguing which one is better, that or the pack of salt water. That's the... Okay. So what is this about, the 10 pieces of bread? So it says the Shulchan Aruch in Source 18. The Ramah says, V'nagim l'haniach pesisei chometz b'makom sheyimtsoim abodik. We have a minhag to put out pieces of bread where the person who's searching will find them. Why? Kedei shelo yehei berchaso levatal. Because you're going to make a bracha at the beginning of this search. And what if you don't find any bread? Will you have made a bracha in vain? Al bedikas chametz, al biur chametz. See, I already made the wrong bracha. Al biur chametz. So that's why we put out the bread, to make sure it's not in vain. Umihu, however, im lo nosan lo ikev, if you didn't do this, it's not necessary. Didas kol adam im habracha leva'er im nimtza. Because what do we really mean when we see the bracha of al biur chametz? What we're really trying to say is that we're going to do this search in case we find chametz. If you don't find chametz, so it's your lucky day. But that doesn't mean that your search was in vain, so the bracha is still good. And the Mishnah Berurah clarifies that more in source number 19. Why would one think that the bracha would be a bracha levatala if you didn't find chametz? And what are we really saying when we say that if you don't find the chametz on the bracha, it's not a bracha levatala because you still did the search. What was the point of the search? If it didn't result in any outcome, if it didn't result in any chametz. So you might be thinking to yourself that what I'm about to say, which is that bedikas chametz, as I alluded to, as we were going through these different areas of halacha, may have more than just a pragmatic nature. It might have what I would call a ceremonial nature, which means that when I do the bedika, the point is not just to get the chametz and get it out of my sight so that I don't eat it. The point is for me to make a statement about my relationship to the chametz. In advance of the holiday of Pesach, I want to do an action that reflects my mindset towards the chametz. So when I go on a search and destroy mission, what I'm doing is saying I want no part of this item. Now, if that's the case, so that I can very well understand why I don't actually need to find the chametz at the end of the day. Because the whole purpose was to exhibit that mindset, which I do via the process, right? Now, why is the bracha al biur chametz, not al bedikas chametz? Why is it so important that I speak about the end of the process when I'm doing the beginning of the process? Because if I'm really authentic about my interest in getting rid of this chametz, in nullifying my relationship to this chametz, so then at the point of the search, I have to be willing to destroy it. If I'm searching for something, but I'm not willing to actually get rid of it, I'm not willing to walk the walk, so to speak, so then that search is meaningless when it comes to my relationship with the chametz. So I'm talking about the biur at the time of the bedika, because the end of the process really signifies what the beginning of the process is about. The fact that I'm going to destroy this chametz tomorrow morning reflects back on tonight that the reason why I'm searching is because I want to sever my connection to this item. That's why we have that bracha of al biur chametz instead of al bedikas chametz. Why is the candle so definitional to the process? Because the candle is what allows me to get into every nook and cranny, every crack and crevice. And that is definitional to the process, not just because I'm worried that there might be a kezias that lies around. It's because if I'm really trying to sever my connection, I'm going to go all the way. I'm all in this process, in making sure that I'm going to search every single part that I possibly can. And that's why the candlelight is definitional to the mitzvah. So much so that the Ran can derive from there that there's a biblical expression to the mitzvah from the psukim that are used to teach the candlelight. And why is it so important that I do it right at the beginning of the night? Well, yes, I want to make a statement about the day, that it's a guarded day. But perhaps also, there's an added element of zrizin makdim in the mitzvos, of alacrity in the mitzvah of bedikas chametz. Sometimes zrizus can be a universal concept, which we apply to any mitzvah that comes our way. We always want to do a mitzvah as quickly as we can. We want to represent that we care about the mitzvos, right? And if we care about it, if we're passionate about it, then we're going to do it right away. We're not going to dilly-dally. But sometimes zrizus is not only a universal concept, it's also a particularistic concept. Meaning it has a certain personal expression in this mitzvah. Zrizus is even more important to this mitzvah of bedikas chametz because of what the bedika is trying to accomplish. What I'm trying to declare with the bedika is that I want nothing to do with this chefta. I want nothing to do with this item. Well, if you really want nothing to do with it, well, then you're going to sever your relationship with it right away. You're not going to just hold on and, okay, tomorrow, I'll deal with it tomorrow, procrastinate. No, right away, you're going to get it done. That's why tchilas halayla is also definitional to this mitzvah. When you take all of these puzzle pieces together, so we see that bedikas chametz is not just something where, you go on a journey around the house and it's a mission and it's like, so in some families, it's a joke because I already cleaned the house and whatnot. I know I'm not really going to find the chametz. It's so much more than that. Because at the end of the day, as we saw, it's not about finding the piece of chametz. Yes, we'll put out the pieces because according to some, you should actually have a piece of chametz that you can take and you can destroy it. But the bedika is about my making a statement, a declaration about my relationship to this item. And we could take this all the way back to the second answer of the Bali Atosos in source number 3, which I held until now because it makes so much more sense once you see the rest of the sugya. So if you jump down to the third to last line in source number 3, Tosfos says, Inami. Another reason maybe why we have the mitzvah of bedikas chametz is because shiny chametz is a different type of item. Shehechmira ba'Torah. The Torah was extremely stringent about chametz. Lavor bebal yiroe ubal yimotzeh. They are going to trespass the prohibitions of owning. We don't have that type of prohibition when it comes to other isurim. When it comes to, treif. You can't own treif. You can't own something that's not kosher. No, you can't eat it. There's no prohibition to own it.
Not a restaurant? No,
you can't cause people to... you can't get hana'ah from the basar b'chalav. That's true.
But hana'ah would be the parnasa.
But the owning itself, right? If it's just like it's in my possession, I'm not getting any hana'ah from it. So then the ownership itself, the possession of it, wouldn't be problematic. Whereas when it comes to ba'i rabba imatze, it's not about the benefit. Even just the mere possession would be a problem. The fact that it's in my inventory would be a problem. Yeah, good question. And in addition, so what do you see? The Torah went out of its way to be very stringent about chametz. And there's a tshuva of the Radvaz, Rabbi Nudavid ben Shlomo. He lived in the 1500s in many different places, including in Egypt and also in Israel. And the Radvaz has a tshuva where he describes all of the different chumras, all of the different stringencies that we apply to chametz that sometimes don't even apply to the worst of the worst in the Torah, not even to Avodah Zarah. Chametz is the reason why we're all going crazy with pasturing our kitchens and making sure that everything is... Because chametz is not even batel b'mashehu. It means even if there's just a little bit of chametz in the food, it's a problem. Chametz is the most severe of prohibitions, and at the same time, it's something that we can eat the entire rest of the year. It's such a fascinating concept. What is that about? So Tosu says maybe because the Torah was so stringent about chametz, it prohibited you from owning it, that's why we also search after it. What does one have to do with the other? And Tosos goes on to say that even when you're not at risk of violating the prohibition of possession, you still have to search. How do these all add up with one another? So seemingly what Tosos is saying, and this is the way that Murray Rabbi of Rosenzweig explained the line in the Tosos, is that the fact that the Torah was so stringent about chametz reflects what our perspective on chametz is supposed to be. Chametz to us on Pesach is a totally poisonous item. It's an item that we have to sever our relationship from. And that's why we do bedika. Bedika is the active way of severing our relationship. So if this is the case, we can very much understand all of these different anomalies when it comes to the halachos of bedikas chametz, but there only remains one question that we have 2 minutes to discuss. Why? What is so bad about chametz that it carries with it this type of stature? So very famously, there are many who ascribe to chametz, the status of the Yetzer Hara. Right? We call it the Sa'or Shebi'isa. It's something that's like lurking underneath, that's causing us to spoil, so to speak. And the Radvaz in that Shuvah also likens chametz to the Yetzer Hara. And the idea seems to be that on the holiday of Pesach of Chag HaMatzos, I spoke about this a little bit last night at the Haggadah Marathon. So on the holiday of Chag HaMatzos and Pesach, what we're about to do is enter into a covenantal relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam. Pesach is Ki'ilu, the time of Kiddushin, of the engagement between Klal Yisrael and Hashem. And then we're going to count Sfira, and we're going to get to Shavuos, and we're going to get married, so to speak. So at the time of engagement, we're entering into that contract. We're entering, and not in a legalistic way, right? In the experiential way. We're entering into a bond that we are committing to one another. And what we're saying by rejecting the chametz prior to entering into that bond is that we're going to get rid of all of the filth that could possibly contaminate what should be the purest of bonds. we should have the most pristine connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So before we enter into that, we want to get rid of anything that could possibly compromise that relationship. That seems to be the idea of the Yetzer Hara. And then when we come to Shavuos, and we've built a relationship based on purity, based on principles of sanctity, so then we'll be able to capitalize and we'll be able to implement that relationship in the context of marriage. But there's another idea. And I referenced this idea earlier, and I want to repeat it because it's such an impactful idea that I heard also from Rav Rabbi, Rav Rosenzweig, and it's something that I try to speak about every single year. I think it's so impactful. Rosenzweig explained that Chametz, yes, is the Yetzer Hara, but it's also something else. Chametz represents growth, right? When you make dough, so it rises. The rising is a representation of growth. Matzah is the opposite. Matzah is something that was made without the potential for growth. Why is it so critical that on Pesach, we go out of our way to reject the food item that represents unfettered, unlimited growth? Why is that so critical? So explain to Rosenzweig, again, it goes based on the storyline, based on what we're trying to achieve in Pesach and Shavuos. On Pesach, we gained freedom. Physical freedom from the labors of Mitzrayim. We had Yetzias Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us as his nation. But we don't yet have the blueprint as to how we're going to go about that relationship. We don't yet have the framework of how we're going to serve our master. How we're going to be Banim Lashem. That's what comes on Shavuos. On Pesach, when we're entering into that contract, into that bond, and all that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us is, I love you and I want you to love me too. And we're going to start that relationship together of Moshcheni Acharecha Narutza. But we don't yet really have the blueprint. Hashem's almost saving it in his back pocket, waiting for us to be deserving or ready to accept it. So we can't yet have something that represents unfettered growth. We don't yet have the ability to grow, so to speak. Because we don't have the confines within which we are supposed to grow. Growing without the confines of the Torah is antithetical to spiritual growth. Says the Mishnah in Avos, Ein lecha ben chorin elami sheyasok batorah. The real person who is free is not just somebody who's not shackled, but the person who's able to live a life of meaning and grow within a life of meaning. Ein lecha ben chorin elami sheyasok batorah. The real free person is the person who's able to dive deep into HaKadosh Baruch Hu's blueprint for the world, the Torah. On Pesach, we don't have that yet. So the Chametz is anathema. We sever our connection to it. On Shavuos, Chametz becomes not only permitted, but we actually bring it somewhere where we wouldn't bring it the entire rest of the year. We bring it into the quarters of the Beis HaMikdash. Into the innermost sanctum of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's residence on this earth. Because on Shavuos, when we have the Torah, we can say, yes, I'm going to bring you that chametz. Because now I not only have that contractual relationship with you, we not only have the foundation of the covenant, but we also know how this is going to work. And within that, then we can grow and grow and grow to no end. So wish everybody a beautiful Chag Kol Shavuos Sameach. It's been a pleasure learning with you all season long, and looking forward to another series after Pesach.